Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until three today. And I want to go straight away now to an interview that our new Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, gave to Zara King on Virgin Media yesterday evening. There's been a huge reaction to this interview, and I think when you hear it, you might have some idea why. Zara King asked the Minister, put it to him that a lot of parents were worried and concerned and not confident about sending their children back to school because of the risks involved. Here's what he said.
We manage risk in our lives every time we get into a car. Driving a car is an inherently risky thing to do. So we have seatbelts and we have rules of the road and we have all of these things. Playing sports is an inherently risky thing to do. Our children being on trampolines. This is about recognizing that there are things we do in life which are inherently carry a risk, and we've got to manage that risk.
So that was Stephen Donnelly speaking on Virgin Media last night. Roman Shortall, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Roman, how are you? Just to remind people, in case people have forgotten, although a lot of people won't have forgotten because you made quite a stir yourself when I last spoke to you earlier on this summer, Roman, you were the person who pointed out that Gardaí at the airport were stopping whole plane loads of people, and you were raising questions about whether or not they had the powers to do so.
Yeah, that's correct.
But you're in touch with us today because you saw this interview last night.
I did, yeah. And I suppose I was kind of bemused, like the rest of the population, when I watched it. I mean, at first it was kind of amusing, and I'm still kind of joking about it today. But I think for a lot of parents like myself, you know, it's quite worrying to see something like that. I mean, we're in a delicate phase now with coronavirus, and basically to see something like that is quite worrying, considering that this person is in charge of the Department of Health.
What was wrong with what he was saying, Roman?
Well, I mean, what was right with it? I think that's the question. It was a completely ludicrous comparison to make. It didn't really make any sense what he was saying. I think as Zara King said, like, do you really want to compare jumping on a trampoline to a worldwide pandemic that's killing people? I mean, I think the problem is that there's a communication. It's not a political issue. There's a communication issue with the government. I mean, you know, a lot of people would criticize the government for, political reasons or whatever. But this is something where I think most sensible people, irrespective of their politics, could say there's something wrong here. There's an issue with communication in the government. And I think, you know, this issue with going back to schools is huge, because the schools are supposed to open in the next week or so. And nobody really knows what the plan is. Minister for Education seems to have disappeared as well. So all these different things combined, you know, just doesn't inspire confidence.
But Roman, if I can put it to you, I did see others defending the minister online and saying, look, it's about time that maybe he didn't put it in the best possible way, but the central point is a point that's well made, is that, look, it is, there's inherent risks in many things that we do, and even in things that we have our children doing. And returning into the classroom at this time does carry a risk, but, you know, it's a risk that we're willing to take.
Well, I would say that, like, there's a massive hypocrisy there, because on the one hand, you're saying that, like, I mean, my kids go to a school where I think there is about 500 students in the building and about 30 kids to each class. At the same time, you're saying that that's a risk, and you know, it's just essentially a chance. We're going to roll the dice on it. But at the same time, you're saying that, you know, you can't have more than X amount of people playing a sport, or you can't have spectators outside watching the sport. Like, you know, and listen, I'm not being critical of the restrictions that are being brought in, but what I'm saying is that you can't, on the one hand, bring in restrictions like that, and then on the other hand, you know, dismiss very legitimate concerns that parents and teachers have about their children going back to school. I think anybody would see that there's a massive hypocrisy there, that, look, you can't watch a GAA match, but, you know, you can put 500 kids in the school.
But I suppose really they would say, and I mean, because I don't have anyone here to say it for them, I'll say it for them myself. They would say that the reason we are stopping people going to football matches and putting all those other restrictions that are, you know, very onerous restrictions on people in place is because we want to reduce community transmission as much as possible so that we can put the children back into the classroom.
Yeah, well, I think that ship has sailed. I mean, if they wanted to reduce community transmission, they could have accepted NSAID's recommendation that was made a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, they get moving on meat factories and direct provision. I mean, we know that at least one third of cases are as a result of outbreaks in direct provision and meat factories and mushroom growers as well.
Yeah, I think the figure was something between 400 and 500 cases of the 1,250 yeah. cases in the last couple of weeks directly related to those scenarios.
Exactly. So I think, like, that's, you know, that's another issue. Like, on the one hand, you're saying that you can't do this, you can't do that. But on the other hand, you're ignoring solid advice of saying, look, there is an issue here with, you know, meat factories. There is an issue with direct provision. And now people are saying there is an issue with schools. But it seems, again, that maybe they're not going to listen. And, you know, we might be paying for that again in a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, you said at the start there, Roman, it's a very precarious time in relation to where we're at with this virus in this country, I think. And I think every step we take one way or another is, you're nervous. You're nervous of which way it's going to go. I want to go. Will you stay there, Roman? I want to go Helen is waiting on the line. Helen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Did you see Stephen Donnelly's interview?
I didn't. I heard it on the news this morning, but I didn't see the interview. To be honest, with my state school, Katie, I just feel, and I want to speak on behalf of all my colleagues around the country, what I feel is, like, the fact that he's, first of all, putting five children into a class, which is completely impossible to do financially, and their education in terms of their stage school, their dance, their singing is just as important. It's just as important in my view, you know, call me biased or whatever, but it's the view of a lot of people. And I've been in the business, I've had this present stage school, the Helen Jordan Stage School, for 33 years. And I know that it's very important. And my gripe is that he's saying it's recreational, it's non-essential. And my answer to that is, how dare he say that? Because it is so essential. It's so essential for their health, for their physical health, their mental health, you know, their overall well-being.
Is it though, Helen, would most parents genuinely believe that if it came down to a choice between your stage school or your regular school, your primary school or your secondary school, do you think people would agree with you that they were equally essential, both those scenarios?
A lot of people would, yeah. A lot of people would, especially, and I mean, I know it from my previous history, all the students that have gone on to make it their career, and some of them working with yourself in RTE and all over the globe and have made it their career. Like, sometimes when... sometimes when schools say to parents, oh, they can't be missing such a day because of, you know, a rehearsal for a TV show or theatre, whatever, I say to them, well, tell the teacher it's their college education. But that's me, Katie, you know, obviously, you know, that's... But no, just apart from that, it is so important for their overall health and well-being. And if that's what they want to do, I feel it's as important as their academic education.
there will be many parents who don't have children in state schools or whose children, you know, don't go down that route.
Sure.
And, you know, they might feel, listening to you, thinking, well, look, that's grand for you and for those kids and for those families, but I want the circumstances to be as the best circumstances possible to ensure that my children are getting back into their regular school. And if that means other things such as stage schools and dance schools and all those other type of activities are shut down, so be it. They might, you know, that I wouldn't say that's an unreasonably radical view, Helen.
I know, but the thing is, we feel the same, that the health and safety of the children is paramount. And, you know, but there is no difference. I mean, if we're taking a class of 14 students, and a teacher, and we have all our restrictions in place, I think that our situation is actually, you know, safer than going into a class with 30 people. And listen, let's get back.
Yeah, I do think, Helen, that is something that we hear again and again, and people are very confused about why one thing is being allowed and another thing isn't. And in particular, yeah, as you say, when we have much smaller classes and social distancing would be more manageable.
Yeah. But, I mean, how come he's allowed gyms to open? And the crazy thing of the theatres that he had, wanting 6 people to go into a theatre. I mean, how mad is that?
Well, that was turned around, I think, I think there was a huge amount of confusion back and forth in relation to that
crazy.
One.
Anyway, I'm very passionate about what I do, Katie. I'm very passionate about the students that I have. And I know that they're missing this stuff terribly, and it is affecting them, you know.
I just say to Roman, I've got Johnny on the line as well, but just first before I go to Johnny, I just ask, Roman, are you concerned about your kids going back to school?
Yes, of course, of course. It's a very worrying time. Like, obviously, I want them to go back. Like all kids, they want to see their friends, and they've been really, you know, I think most kids are kind of suffering from fatigue, and they're just fed up. They want to get back and see their friends, and, you know, it's been very challenging mentally, I think, for kids. I think it's one thing that's not really talked about a lot is the mental challenge for kids themselves to be, you know, taken out of school so suddenly, and you know, that's it. Like, no more school, no more friends from school. I mean, I know we've technology and all, they can communicate with them, but still, it's been very difficult.
But how worried are you about the risks involved?
We've seen, like, that kids have been quite resilient themselves to the virus. But I think, obviously, the main concern is it being passed on to other people. I would have vulnerable family members. I have an 87-year-old grandmother. And people like that, I mean, it could be easily passed on to those people. And I think that's the concern. And, of course, teachers as well. Like, I mean, teachers will be on the front line. They'll have, you know, they'll be interacting with maybe 30 kids in a class or, you know, maybe less. It depends what the exact plan is going to be. But, you know, they have vulnerable family members as well. So there's huge risks. And we know from, as I said, from what happened in other close contact scenarios like factories and, you know, direct provision accommodation, but when a lot of people do interact together,
it's inevitable,
you know,
really. It's inevitable.
And don't forget as well that in those, in a lot of factories, even though, well, from what we've heard, like, that there was PPE equipment being worn, even that wasn't enough. But in primary schools, kids won't be wearing masks.
No.
And they'll be sitting in the room together for several hours a day. So it's kind of inevitable, really. I have to agree with Micheál Martin, and he was right on that when he said, I think it was himself that said it, that it was inevitable that there'd be clusters in schools. And I think it is inevitable. But I think the main issue now is communication. There has to be a plan. A proper plan in place. The Minister for Education and the Minister for Health need to
I don't know, maybe address the nation together and say, look, we have a proper plan in place and communicate it as a team. Like this idea of different departments coming out, one saying 50 people can go to the cinema, the other saying 6 people can go to the cinema. I mean,
yeah, I don't think that was
not
yeah,
really, that's not acceptable.
I don't think yesterday was their finest hour in terms of communication.
No,
I think that would be generally acknowledged at this stage. They're still trying to clean up the various confusion that arose out of that. Roman, stay there. I want to go to Johnny yep. Luby. Johnny, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate. How are you keeping?
You're worried about the rugby match on Saturday, Johnny.
Yeah, Kate, I'd be worried about a lot of things. You know, I just feel that the message is not getting across. The simple, basic message of doing your best, washing your hands maybe 40 or 50 times a day, so be it. Also, the 2 metres apart and wearing masks. They are the three basic things that are there at the moment, and the message is not getting across. Whether we have taken our foot off the pedal, I don't know, but certainly the government had plenty of time to think out this phase that they've brought in there since yesterday. Mm-hmm. And how you can say that not to use public transport and at the same time maybe 40 youngsters getting on a bus in Golden or Clonalty or whatever the case may be and heading for Cashel or Tullis, it's almost impossible to get your head around it. And then to think that we have Munster playing Leinster on Saturday in the they could have played it in Murphy's Field now because there won't be anybody at it. And the plain facts of the matter is, when you think about it, between scrums especially, pause, reset and pause again, and the referee could actually reset it 6 times and to get the scrum right. And you have players logging off each other and the sweat coming down and everything else, especially in the game of rugby. I follow all the sports, whether it's rugby, soccer, hurling, football, you name it. And that, and to think that 4 people can play a game of handball inside an alley, it has to be 2. There's things that neon impossible to grasp, and I find it very hard to understand that if the players can't have a shower in the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, what are they supposed to do? Get into their cars individually and drive back down to Limerick or drive someplace in Leinster, let it be down to Carlow or whatever else. It's impossible. I honestly believe that our message isn't right, number one, but secondly, it's almost impossible to grasp. And the third thing is that we are not getting the message properly right. They're not thinking about it, Kate. Thinking it out amongst the experts.
Is it though, to give them the benefit, Johnny, of the doubt, is it a case that it was a lot easier when the message was a lot easier? Because the message was much simpler at the start. It was simply don't do anything. Nobody does anything. Everyone stays in their home. Nobody moves within more than 2 kilometres of the house. All the shops are closed. All the bars are closed. All the restaurants are closed. All the sporting events are closed. That was an easy message. But once you start opening up, it starts to get complicated, doesn't it?
Yeah, but they made it complicated themselves, Katie, as well. If you look at the pub scene, I mean, a restaurant, a come pub, and I have nothing against them, I've went into them all, and that how a sandwich costing €9 can be the difference between getting COVID and not getting COVID than an ordinary wet pub. I mean, we have pubs here down in Tipperary that haven't opened up since last March. They've done everything by the book, and they're still being blamed out there, even though they're not opened. It's hard to grasp it. I've no doubt, and I've been in many pubs from time to time, whether it was at celebrating victories or celebrating losses or whatever the case may be, and that. And by and large, they run a superb outfit, and that. But how a sandwich can be, they're not getting the message across. You just can't open up one thing and leave the other thing closed. That both of them should have been closed down, and that is it.
Is that it? Do you think they should be? I was just going to ask you that. Do you think there should be more things opened or more things closed?
I would certainly give the pubs a chance, that is me, because if you maybe from 6 o'clock and even at 10 o'clock at night, they will run a superb show. I have no doubt about it.
Johnny, we're told and the public health people tell us that pubs with alcohol involved, inherently risky. I'm using the minister's words now. Now I'm on the inherently risky line. But that they are, that once you introduce alcohol, if you don't have people seated at tables and having purely that you are, it's an inherently risky environment.
Yeah, but Katie, there was a good horse one time called The Risk Factor. And if you put a fiver on him, That's exactly what it was a risk factor. And everything is risky out there, there's no question about it. I have two boys teaching and that, and it's a huge, I'd be concerned for them as a grandparent. I have youngsters going to first fellas starting off in secondary school. I'd be concerned for them. They are the front line. And that, and parents leave the youngsters in, and the teachers are expected to get everything right. And that, and it's going to be a huge thing for them. And
what do you make of what? Well, let's play it again, actually, because there's such talk about it. I'll see if I can get it yet. Let's hear Stephen Donnelly again talking on Virgin Media last night.
We manage risk in our lives. Every time we get into a car, driving a car is an inherently risky thing to do. So we have seatbelts and we have rules of the road and we have all of these things. Playing sports is an inherently risky thing to do. Our children being on trampolines. This is about recognizing that there are things we do in life which are inherently carry a risk, and we've got to manage that risk.
What?
The virus is way more important than way more serious. The word I want to use is way more serious than the youngsters jumping in trampolines. I mean, I went into the trampoline as late as yesterday, and I'm 66 years of age with the grandchild.
Did you? Fair play to you, Johnny.
But to me, the virus is a way more riskier thing altogether. I honestly believe that the message has to be got right, and no disrespect to Simon Donnelly or to Mr. Donnelly, that Simon Harris. Possibly, maybe he was dealing with an easier thing at the time, but he was certainly well able to get his message across, and I have no links whatsoever to any parties whatsoever, but he was certainly able to get the message across. When you read, when you seem to be reading out notes and that, you're probably reading what somebody else in the department has written. Simon Harris was able to talk off the cuff and bring it down to the rural people and the city people of Ireland. This is what we have to do. As I said, the basics, it's the same as a coach talking to a hurling team. You look at the hurling match, I mean, 15 into a match. It's either that or else. I honestly believe at the end of the day that we're on the road to lockdown.
Do you?
Yes, and I can see it coming, and I don't want to see it coming, but that's what I feel.
Well, I see just on that today, there was some anonymous senior sources, as they call them in the paper, being quoted today saying that it was actually discussed over the last few days, over the weekend, the possibility of going back into lockdown, but that the government were not going to contemplate it because, you know, the implications for the economy and for society in general.
But it that would be it, huge, Kate, but I just
it would
wonder,
be huge, yeah.
Should we actually close down for one full month? I don't know, but I can tell you this.
Go back to where we were back in March and April, you mean?
Yeah. It is facing that.
How would you respond to that? How would people respond to that?
Well, I wouldn't like to see it, but if it's going to help to get rid of this virus, then so be it. It's that we'll just have to batten down the hatches. It's like the storm. We have to batten down the hatches and wait for it to go to blow over. I mean, they tell us to have respect for the elders, have respect for the youngsters. That's grand. They'll all have respect for us. But we have to have respect for this virus, which has actually no respect for anyone out there. We have got to do it. And even, look, to the simple thing, I went into the shop this morning there in Golden, put on the sanitizer coming in, picked up a carton of milk or whatever it was, and I was just coming out after paying for it when it dawned on me, do it again. And you have to do it again. Get into the care. Listen, we just have to get it into our minds each time, Kate. The only way that we can keep ourselves safe is to have this sanitizer in our pockets or whatever the case may be. And don't be ashamed, only be proud of putting it on. And eventually people will say, Jeepers, we have to do this. We have to do it. And look, that's my honest, and I agree with your two speakers there. Look, they're both concerned, and I would, as I said, for the two boys that are teaching, and for all the teachers, not alone my own two lads, for all the teachers and the first aides that are in school and all of that. Look,
it's
going to be huge for them, and that. But comparing it to jumping in a trampoline, listen, I jumped and I done a somersault, and honest to God, above tonight.
You did a somersault, Johnny.
Katie,
do you have any photographic evidence of this?
I'm half thinking of heading to the doctor. I think I pulled a muscle, but I'm enjoying it. We're all enjoying our lives to go every place and any place, you know. And that. But look, these are tough times. I don't see the hurling championships going ahead or the football championships. I just can't see them. I reckon we should just get the counties out of the way, the club championships. Just get them out of the way. Blow it over and forget about it then. Because we have got to do what Neffert says. And there's no point in Neffert saying, listen, stay 4 yards apart. And the government says, I'll expect that. We'll go 3 yards apart. You've got to do what they say now. And that's it. These are the guys that have the scientific evidence. We've got to go by it because we haven't a clue what this virus
is. Well, if they went by that, we'd have no, the weddings would be gone. They were recommending only 15 people.
July, he had to call it off because of the circumstances and that. And look, I just said to him, listen, you're giving everybody a chance now to get a few quid together to give you a right few pounds next year. And I said, and that's what he's abiding by. You know, you have to do it, and that's it. Look, these are small sacrifices to make in comparison to this virus. Until we have it bit, and as Irish people, that's my look, I'm only an ordinary Joe Soap, say, listen, lads, we've got to try and beat this virus. There's no point in saying step dancing. I think I heard it on another radio station there that it's coming in under sport and things like that. Hey, if it is, who are we to go against it? I wouldn't like to see step dancing or the theatres and all them things done away with at the moment. But if it's going to beat the virus, then we have got to beat it, Kate.
Okay. And you were talking there, Johnny, about teachers, and I have a teacher on another line. Barry, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. You were listening to Stephen Donnelly last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was another remark that he made actually in the piece, which actually was an outstanding piece of journalism, I have to say, by your colleagues over in Virgin.
But where he said Zara King. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. But where he said that the school is a controlled environment, but the family home isn't. I mean, I simply can't make head nor tail of that line of argumentation, I have to say. I mean, schools are, you know, we're managing large numbers of people. We're doing the best that we possibly can, but I don't think anybody would argue that a school is an entirely controlled environment every moment of every day, and I don't think anybody who's ever been to school would make that argument. You're doing your best to manage large numbers of people, but I don't think it's comparable to two parents and two or three children. Where the average school might have 600 kids and 40 odd teachers.
And what are you, primary or second level?
Secondary, yeah.
And what's your feelings about going back to school?
Yeah, I think over the course of the summer there's been an unfortunate kind of perception maybe that has developed that perhaps teachers were reluctant in general terms to return to the classroom, and it's kind of come down to an almost parent versus teacher thing, which has been terribly unfortunate. Schools have to reopen, there's no doubt about that. Education has to resume, but we have to look at the evidence that the ECDC and the World Health Organization have given us, and it applies to all aspects of life. And they make it clear that older children transmit the virus every bit as efficiently as adults. I mean, a kid in sixth year is very likely to be 18 nowadays after having done transition year. They make it clear that community transmission has to be substantially suppressed in order for schools not to contribute to the growth of the disease. And they also make it clear that the single biggest criterion is actually physical distancing. And, you know, teachers like me are heading back into classrooms with up to 30 sixth-year students in front of them in the next couple of weeks. So it seems to be totally contradictory to where we are as a country at the moment and to the scientific evidence, which ultimately is what we all have to be bound by.
And are you worried then?
I would say that there is a degree of anxiety. But what I think, Katie, a key thing is schools are all about routine. I mean, this is a point that so many parents have been making over and over, that they want the children back into the routine of going to school, of being with their friends and, you know, resuming their lives. School isn't about opening the doors in a spectacular at the beginning of September with a sound and light show or whatever else. And the risk we run here is that if we reopen schools in a manner that is running contrary to the broad thrust of the public health advice at the moment, we run the risk of schools having to close again if it does, you know, if there are clusters and outbreaks in schools, which is, and, you know, ultimately, would it not be better to have a more gradual reopening of schools in line with the place that we're all at with COVID up until the 13th of September, because we want to kind of, we want to keep them open as best we can. We don't, you know, just opening them isn't good enough. It's actually keeping the children in school. And that's, I think, where there's a real risk there. And I'm basing that on the evidence that we have from the ECDC and the World Health Organization with regard to how this virus actually operates.
Right. OK, thanks for that, Barry. I'm going to have to take a break there. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Or you can text us on 51551 or email joe@rte.ie. Sarah, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie.
You're a teacher as well, Sarah.
I am.
And you have kids going to school as well.
Yeah, I do. And we have a very high-risk husband at home. So, I'm very excited to come back to work. I want to go back to work, and my kids are dying to go back to school. But alongside that is a fair amount of anxiety about the risk to my husband, and about, I feel like families like ours have been forgotten in the plans or not given sufficient attention in the plans. And last night's footage kind of finished me off, if you like, in terms of being quite frustrated and upset by the fact that we haven't been considered.
So when you say last night's footage, you mean this interview with Stephen Donnelly?
Yeah. Like when he talked about the home being an uncontrolled environment, we have, like, if we've had to have, you know, a plumber or an electrician in at all over the last few weeks, they come in, all windows and doors are open, they're masked, I'm masked, 2 metres distance, and when they're gone, the house is scrubbed. That's a very controlled environment, because we have to have that level of control over things for my husband. And a classroom, to some degree, you can manage, but the realistic element of classroom life is that it has to be largely kind of, you know, free-flowing and some degree of, you know, not as much control as I've had at home.
And I don't want to pry, but your husband has some health issue that would be making him very vulnerable to COVID.
Yeah, he's classified as extremely medically vulnerable.
Okay. And do you have a choice in whether or not you go back to school in these circumstances?
No, because I think the only provisions that are made for people to not go back to school is if they are very high risk themselves. But even if such a provision were to exist and say I didn't go back and I worked from home and made provisions in that way, my three children are still in school. So, you know, it's almost, if there were such a provision, it would be pointless if my kids were going into the same environment.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. And I know there are many, I know other families in exactly the same position that you find yourself in now, Sarah. It's very, very difficult. What, like, you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place.
I am, and I want to go back to work. I miss the kids, I miss my colleagues, I miss, you know, school life. And as your previous speaker said, unfortunately, there's been a lot of rhetoric around teachers and negative kind of talk about our role and holidays and all the usual stuff. And that's been very upsetting as well, because, you know, we all worked really hard from March to June, and I want to go back. My kids are dying to go back. And I will go back, but I'm so, so anxious about it. So anxious.
And when you saw the minister last night talking about, oh, you know, we drive cars, they're risky, kids go on trampolines, they're risky.
I threw my phone across the couch. It was really upsetting. I was very upset by it. You know, my kids have a trampoline. Them going on the trampoline and falling off and breaking their wrist isn't going to make their dad very, very ill. You know, it was insulting to families like mine. I really found it very upsetting to hear that.
And your dad as well would have been involved in picking the kids up from school.
Yeah, we'd have my dad helping out with pickups and drop-offs. So we're trying to figure out, you know, new ways of doing things.
Because he would be in he'd be in the age bracket that would be.
Yeah, so we're trying to figure out different ways of doing it, you know, and ways to manage that as well. So, but at the moment, that's kind of down the list of priorities, is just figuring out how to keep my husband safe, because he's going to be the one who's going to have the most exposure.
So what are you thinking? Like, is there going to, like, have you thought through changing clothes? Like, what can you do to mitigate the risks that
I've ordered some KN95 masks for myself because they're supposed to be the, you know, the highest filtration and that kind of thing. The kids aren't going to be masked in school because their peers won't be, and I don't think it's fair to ask them to do that or realistic. And that's kind of it. We've discussed kind of maybe changing clothes and things, hand washing, all the things that we're recommended to do, but it just feels like the stakes are a bit higher and the exposure is obviously going to be a lot higher.
Yeah, I can hear the anxiety in you there. In terms of, like, have you been given any advice from the school in terms of maybe, as you say, changing clothes at the door or...
Oh, look, my school are incredibly supportive and we're all figuring out the roadmap as we go. So, you know, we're going to do as much as we can. But realistically, you know, in terms of aerosol transmission and everything else, you know, changing clothes may be some sort of help or maybe some sort of limiter on risk. But, you know, it's going to be there all the time. I don't know how much that will mitigate things, but we'll see.
Okay, Sarah, bear with me now. I want to go to Joe. Joe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
You agree with what the minister was saying last night, do you?
To an extent, Katie, I don't. The main problem here, and I'm a long-term listener, and this is the first time I've ever called in because I've just been infuriated over the last couple of months since this government has came into power about communication. I think my heart goes out to your caller there, Sarah, and all the other hundreds of thousands of people and families in the country that are just utterly confused today, yesterday, and probably will be again tomorrow. Because I think what the minister was trying to say yesterday was that there are going to be risks. If we want to live with COVID-19 over the next couple of years, we have to live with risk. Now, why he had to go about making those ridiculous links to, like, having a trampoline or wearing seatbelts is just beyond me. And I was listening to the news at one there, and a big portion of it was around the miscommunication yesterday with the theatres, with all the different uncertainty around the lockdowns or this lighter lockdown. And at 20 to 2, an article was put up on RTE News that the Taoiseach rejects claims of confusion over COVID-19 messaging. Like, this, it's laughable. Like, if there was no confusion, your show would be talking about something completely different every day over the past 2 weeks, you know, because confusion has been the running theme. So for him to come out and say that there is no confusion, that the message is clear, is just ridiculous. And it stems right through the Minister for Education, for Health. It's just been so confusing. And I totally appreciate that tough decisions and difficult measures have to be put in place. But my God, they could do a job on the communication. And I'm absolutely by no means a fan of Fine Gael or anything like that. But the one thing I will say, despite their many failings in the past, before this, the communication was clear. We mightn't have agreed with it the whole time, but it was clear. And that's just what frustrates me so much over the past few days, is just this level of confusion around communication.
I wonder, I mean, I think a lot of people would agree with you, obviously, Joe, in terms of how the communication it was a much more black and white, as I said to Johnny earlier, it was a more black and white scenario up until now. Now the government is obviously trying to chart this very difficult path between keeping certain parts of the economy running and going and cutting down things that they believe are non-essential to try and halt this community transmission. It was always going to be trickier, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, Katie, the government is meant to be the highest level of, you know, in this country that sets an example for everybody else. And, you know, if anyone is really to get it right, it's meant to be the government. And I mean, yes, there are lots of different concepts and things now to overcome. But my God, they can talk between departments. The fact yesterday that the Department of Health and the Department of Heritage were given completely different messages. Every couple of minutes, they were releasing new statements.
I know, that was just, you know, that, like, was almost comical if it hadn't been, you know, so serious
comical
for so many people.
And now we have an article where the Taoiseach rejects claims of confusion. Like, at least acknowledge that there's been difficulties. At least acknowledge. But I think what infuriates the country even more so is, you know, every couple of weeks or every couple of different statements we had, let me be clear, the message is clear, but it's different every time. And it's trying to sugarcoat to say that it is clear when it really isn't. So I think by saying the message is clear doesn't mean that it is. And I think that's what's really, really infuriating. We all accept that this is really, really difficult and there's no exact blueprint of what has to be done. But, you know, just do a bit of work on your communication. And I think a lot of these own goals, as the commentators have been saying over the past few weeks, wouldn't be conceded, because I think a lot of this is their own doing. You know, it's just about being a bit clearer with the communication.
Do you think if we hadn't had the change of government that we would not have these problems, or are the problems connected with the changing in the message or the change in the government?
Who knows, Katie? Look, there's all the politicians, I suppose, they're always in the limelight, so it is always easier for us to highlight the mistakes that are being made. And what's to say that, you know, that the same mistakes wouldn't have been made? But I was watching Primetime there the other night, and the Minister for Health was on, and I had to switch because I was getting so infuriated by the messaging. And, you know, the reporter was asking excellent questions, and I wasn't overly clear by the end of it. Now, maybe that's just me.
Yeah, that was an excellent interview by Mark Coughlin, actually, on Prime.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And I will say, any time in the past, you know, when Simon Harris was interviewed, I at least left being clear of what he was saying. You know, and I mightn't have agreed with it, and many times I didn't, and many times I did, but I was clear. And I don't think, you know, it's as easy as saying, let's just go back to the last government. I said, I'm no fan of Fine Gael by any means. But I will say that it was clear that we knew what was going on. And, you know, we had a fairly decent understanding. Even if we didn't agree with it, we had a fairly decent understanding of what was going on. As opposed to today, as I said, from 1 o'clock to about 1:30, listening on the news about all the different confusion yesterday between the Ministry for Health and Culture and Heritage, and then 10 minutes later on RTÉ, an article where the Taoiseach rejects claims of confusion over COVID-19 messaging. Like, come on.
Come on is right. Okay, Joe, thank you for that. I have to take a break, but we want to stay with this because I have a caller who agrees with Stephen Donnelly after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And we are talking about Stephen Donnelly's interview on Virgin Media last night, which has created quite the stir. Anne, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
What did you make out of that interview?
No, I didn't hear the full interview. I heard the quote from it on the radio today at lunchtime and on your programme earlier on. And that's what I rang in about. I do want to start by saying, however, that I do think the overall message from the government over the last few days has been extremely confused in terms of giving direction on what's acceptable and what's required of people. However, in terms of Stephen Donnelly's point, in terms of risk and risk-taking and what we do to manage risk, I actually agree to that largely with the point he's making. My biggest concern is that I think we're getting quite confused between things like what are people's rights, what are things that people need, and what are things that we simply want, like going on holidays, going shopping, attending a football match. And my position in relation to this is that I think children have a fundamental right to their education, which is typically given to them and has been for generations in schools, in a social context, where they get to play with their friends and have physical activities. So I don't think it's fair or reasonable to equate risks associated with that and how we manage those risks with, you know, taking a risk of 30 people going on a bus to a football match as compared with 30 children going to school. Don't know if my point is clear at that.
So what you're saying is that basically there's some risks that are worth the risk.
Taking, yeah. We
so it's a risk-benefit analysis
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we make decisions on risk all the time. And if something is as fundamental and basic and necessary as the children's right to an education, I think we take risks and we do everything in our power to manage those risks and we put huge resources into that. I don't think it's an equal argument to say we would put the same resources or we would take the same decision on risk about going shopping or going to match if you're an adult.
So you think that the minister really was saying, look, of course, there's risk involved, and acknowledging that there was a risk involved, and maybe, you know, maybe clumsily bringing in the idea of trampolining or you know, driving, but that essential point is there's risk involved. But this, we have to go ahead anyway because that we have to have children in school.
That would be, that's my response to it. And I think we're losing the point if we start talking about you have 30 children on a bus, but you won't have 30 people going to a match or don't use public transport in general. You know, it's about managing risks and, you know, which risks and what's more important and what are people's fundamental rights and needs and what are the things we want to do.
I just wonder, are we having a very honest discussion really about the risks? Because people are afraid to use the word risks and our children in the same sentence, or have been, I think, up until recently. And there's been a sort of a, it'll be okay, it'll be all right on the night kind of thing approach to the schools reopening. But maybe we need to have a discussion about what level of risk are we being asked to expose ourselves and our children and perhaps our vulnerable, you know, partners to.
Yes, I think that's true. And I think there's, you know, I definitely think there's a much broader issue here than just the thing about the children in schools, because, you know, I think we have been probably reluctant to look at the issue of risk assessment and risk management in this whole thing. And I think maybe it's part of the discussion that hasn't happened really here.
Yeah. OK. And I have another, just to confuse matters, we've been talking about confusing. I have another Anne on another line who wants to talk, I think, in relation to this. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's your take on this, Anne?
Well, I feel I have three girls, 16, 12 and 9. One which is actually was meant to make her first communion in May, which is cancelled. And now it is going ahead on Saturday with just the class numbers. They had their first confession last night and it was the most eerie feeling for the child herself. With her friends all social distance. They couldn't even really talk to their friends. It was just horrendous. And I mean, they're only 9 years of age.
So what are you saying, though? You think that this, it's, we're being too careful?
We're being careful. I mean, the children are growing up with this. They're actually washing their hands. They're going to the supermarket now. They're doing everything they're meant to do, wear their mask. And I think the children, the younger children, will grow up with this and they're quite, you know, they're aware and they're completely aware of what's actually going on around them. And it's quite upsetting for them.
But are you saying that we're being overly cautious, do you think?
Yes, I do. I mean, the basic thing is to tell children and everybody to wash their hands after they do their bits and pieces, their shopping, everything.
But do you understand, like we heard Sarah there, she's really worried, obviously, for her husband, what might be brought back into the house from school. Are you at all concerned about what might happen once the kids go back to school?
Yes, I am aware because I work, you know, I'm a frontline worker and I actually, you know, have to work every day and I have to come home, take off the clothes, have the shower. You know, and I have to be careful with three girls here. You know, and I just feel so upset for the young child who has to make a communion and just completely different circumstances. It's just completely different for them.
I get that, but I'm trying to get a handle on, are you thinking we're being over the top in terms of the safety precautions we're taking?
I don't think we are. I think we're very good, to be quite honest. We've had the kids have had closure in school and they're, like in the households, they're completely washing hands, sanitising. They're doing everything what they're told to do.
But do you think we've any sense of how, you know, of the levels of risks involved in the various scenarios? So the difference, say, of the risk involved in sending your child to school in a pod, you know, socially distanced from the other pods for a full day, compared to, for instance, you know, going to watch a match or you know, some other activity, recreational activity. Do you think we have any sense at all, really, of which of those two scenarios might pose the greater risk?
To be
I think it's hard to know. I just feel that children are very good. I feel that they're, you know, they know how to social distance. They know how to, you know, they know what to do.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. And I see my own kids and I see other friends' kids. They are the ones who will be reminding their parents to wash their hands and to step back and to wear the mask.
Yeah. Put on your mask. Yeah. Or, you know, yeah. I just feel it's just the children that they're actually going to, it's so upsetting for them. You know, even the first communion on Saturday, no photographs.
Yeah. There was no photographs.
No. You're not allowed any photographs. They're not allowed any group photographs. So literally, they'll have to go into the church at 11 with four people in the seat and no group photograph.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all little rites of passage, I suppose, that our children are just having to sacrifice and learn to live without.
Exactly. And as regards schools, they're going to be on two separate different times of school. One starts at 8:45, the other one starts at 9:30.
Well, that's going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of parents,
it
I imagine.
It is for people who are working. The parents who are working.
Yeah, those late drop-offs. Yeah, and you're not allowed to hang around between the two drop-offs. So,
no.
Yeah, it's. I think that's going to be a real headache for a lot of people.
I do think that they forget that parents actually do go to work and they're trying to figure out how we're going to manage this next Thursday and Friday when they all go back to school.
Yeah. I suppose the thing is, everyone is trying to figure out how to do this. I mean, we are kind of stumbling our way into this, aren't we? Trying to figure out how to do it the safest way we can. And it is inevitably going to cause a huge amount of problems and inconvenience for a lot of families.
But I do believe the children have to get back into education. You know, they have to get back in to see their friends. They have to get back, but they'll have to be careful.
Yeah. Okay. And thank you for that.
No problem.
Maureen, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Are you worried about the schools reopening?
I'm very concerned altogether. I just wish people would acknowledge that once the school is opened or the schools are opened, all social distancing is gone. There is no safe way. You can use buzzwords like pods and bubbles or whatever the thing is. You're talking about a million children going back to school. They compare it to opening restaurants and pubs. In a restaurant, you don't get up after 45 minutes and move to another table in another room. Every secondary school in the country is going to have that kind of thing happening. You're talking about having people in an enclosed space, possibly without masks. We're advised, what was the advice initially, that if as long as you're not 15 minutes within the 2 metres of somebody who may be infected, you're safe enough. You're going to have 20 or 30 kids. They're not going to be 2 metres apart. They're already talking about reducing it to 1 metre to be able to fit people into schools. No masks in an enclosed space. Now, 45 minutes in a secondary school, but in a primary school, you're going to have those kids in the same room all day. I just wish that all the nonsense would stop, state it for what it is. We're going to open up the country and we're going to take whatever risks are involved. Because that's the bottom line. There is no way physically possible of maintaining social distancing in either a primary or secondary school. Just acknowledge it. And then when it comes to school buses...
So are we wasting all this time then with our pods and our bubbles? And
we
our
are. I think it is utter nonsense. They're treating us like some kind of imbeciles. It's as if we had a...
Are you? Do you have children at school going age? Or?
No, I don't. I'm a retired secondary school teacher, but I have nieces and nephews of school going age, three of whom are still at primary school. And I'll be the one delivering them to school and that. Now, I'm not concerned about me. I can wear a mask and everything else. I'm very, very concerned about their being in separate classes, mixing with kids. I mean, if every child in the country was a single child, as in no brothers or sisters, then you might get a bit of the social distancing thing working and the pods and bubbles and these things would actually be in some way effective. But once you have siblings, you're talking about different class groupings. So immediately add that to school transport and you have, it's just gone unlimited.
I suppose for people, and I know that, say, Sarah that we spoke to there earlier, who has somebody vulnerable in the house with them and has been so careful from, you know, from March, you know, really minding how they've been and who they've left in the home and all that. You're now going to be mixing with people who maybe didn't have that approach, and you're really only as sterile as the lowest common denominator in that group then, aren't you?
Yes, well, the kids I'm talking about now, their dad had cancer. He has died since. So when they came in from school, before they closed down and everything else, school uniforms were changed into everything, into ordinary clothes. They were taking every measure possible to safeguard their dad, who is expected to be going another course of chemotherapy. Now, there are hundreds of families in the country where children are coming home to people with underlying illnesses. And no amount of... Would we just acknowledge that social distancing is dead and gone once we open the schools? So that the rules about pubs or restaurants or cinemas or theatres are just nonsense, given the context of a million children coming from how many 100,000 different homes, and you have the immediate overlap. Once the schools open, you have an immediate overlap of thousands upon thousands of children, and we just have to acknowledge that's what's going to happen. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know whether you can do the Zoom thing, because then you're talking about every child in the country needing their own laptop, because one laptop in a house isn't enough if you have four or five children being taught remotely. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I do know what you mean.
I don't have a solution. But I just wish all the nonsense talk about pods and bubbles and this, it is an utter nonsense once you have children running around. Once you have in any secondary school, no matter what precautions they take, in restaurants you see these little Perspex dividers between some of the tables. You don't have that in a classroom situation. In a school where you have even 500 kids, at the break of every class, you're going to be moving children from one to the other. The only way you avoid that is don't allow the children to choose their own subjects. Don't allow them to choose the level at which they'll take them. Don't have any optional subjects at all. And that's not going to happen. So,
yeah, so
I wish they'd get real about it and say, look, once we open the schools, forget about social distancing.
So was the minister right then to open up this discussion about risk?
I think he was unfortunate in the kind of analogies he was making. I mean, trampolines and that kind of thing. Absolutely ridiculous.
I'm sure he's looking back at it now himself and thinking, oh, why did I mention trampolines?
Oh, exactly. But I mean, I could see the thing, okay, seatbelts and that, rules of the road. There are rules. We already have guidelines about what to do during COVID times. They're not being observed by a number of people. They're up on social media all the time, and nothing is happening about it. And one of the things that really irritates me in the context, you're going from, all right, the younger generation, you're talking about school and opening the thing up, and now they're penalising people over 70 were actually prisoners in their own home. They actually were. And they're people, nobody wants to die. So those people who are most at risk will be taking most precautions, and yet you can't bring them for a run in the car to even see something nice, to walk on a beach where there's nobody else, you know, which we can do here in the west of Ireland.
So do you think, Maureen, that the people in that scenario, older people, people with vulnerable underlying conditions, that they will pay the price for the schools going back?
I think they're paying the price for a kind of politically correct lip service to COVID. Those people will want to safeguard their own health. They're not going to take unnecessary risks. Actually, I know of a case where a lady, this is now when the total lockdown was in place, a lady lived alone with her elderly mother. She was the sole carer. She had to go into town to collect prescription or something for her mother. She couldn't leave her mother alone. Because of COVID restrictions, she couldn't get a neighbour to come in to mind the mother. So she brought her mother in the car with her and had to have quite a long exchange with a member of the Gardaí who was just doing her job and trying to turn her home. But this lady had absolutely
no
alternative. Yeah. She had to bring her mother with her. Do you know? So I think having that sort of regulation, which is nonsensical for older people who will look after themselves and who will take precautions because they know it's literally a matter of life and death. And I don't know, there's a kind of bureaucracy at play here where you throw out numbers. We have a small church here in Partrey. We're allowed to have 50 people in it. If you apply social distancing rules and if 50 individuals showed up, we wouldn't be able to fit 50 in. But you're talking about having a person at either end of a seat and two empty seats. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Whereas if you just had a sensible rule that the number of people who can be safely accommodated observing the social distancing guidelines, it would make sense. It would stop an awful lot of the hassle. But it's just common sense and it's not being applied.
Yeah. Okay, Maureen, thank you for all of that. I need to take another break now, but stay with us because we're going to we have a lot more calls coming in about that issue of children going back to schools that we want to get to after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liz, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Casey. How are you?
You think that if the schools open, they may not stay open for long.
I'm fully convinced of it. I can't see it working. I want it to work. I have two kids, one going into junior cert and one going into leaving cert. I really think they need their education. I want them back in there, but I just can't see it working. And I just would really love to know, have they looked at it? Like, did they look at any plan B? Like, you know, I know in other countries, I know in Canada, a friend of mine has kids in secondary school and they were given, the home was given a choice to, you know, whether they wanted their child remotely educated or in the classroom. And she said it split pretty much 50-50. They have a granny living with them, so they chose the home option, but it's in-camera teaching. So, like, it all, it's a good solution in a way because automatically there's only 50% of the kids then in the school. So it,
yeah, it works for both.
And, it kind of works for both,
and is that,
yeah,
that they literally have it's a live streamed, the classes are live streamed into people's
homes? I gather,
homes.
Yeah. I just kind of think they're putting all this money into putting sinks in and putting up false walls and gyms and all this and just put a camera into every class and let the teachers go back to school. And the kids then don't have to, but if they're kids of maybe frontline workers or...
Or like Sarah that we heard from earlier there, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, it's not that the schools aren't open, but I just think they have this... Irish thing, like, the kids have to go back to school. Yeah, like, do they? You know, like, don't get me wrong, I can see the effect it's having on my kids not being in school. But we're in it's just uncharted territory. And I just wonder, have they looked at plan B or C or, you know, like in the outback in Australia, kids were educated remotely, have been for nearly 100 years, you know. They had radio stations and all this kind of thing.
If you were given the choice,
COVID hasn't gone away,
Liz,
you know?
if you were given the choice, would you opt for home school or like learning from home?
I'd be torn because they're both going into exam years, and I think they've 5th year is particularly lost out in this since March because they hadn't the course covered once, so they couldn't go home and revise. And all the focus with the teachers was put on the leaving certs. And so I can see that he's way behind, you know, his class are, all of them are. Mm-hmm. Like, they really need to hit the ground running in September. And my fear is that they'll go back into school. There'll be an outbreak, the school will be closed, and we'll be back to Google Classroom and Zoom. And that's not really teaching, if you know what I mean. They were assigned work, but they weren't in live streamed classes, really, you know. And
yeah, I would love to hear more, indeed, from the minister or from anyone in government to see what options have been. Because we had Becky on this programme earlier this week or last week saying that her niece, again, has cystic fibrosis,
yes,
cannot obviously go back into a class. And the the reference to this in the protocols was very glib. It was, you know, communication will have to continue with the school. There doesn't seem to well, I haven't in any sense that there is an overarching plan for these scenarios.
Absolutely. I mean, we don't have any living grandparents. We don't have anybody, you know, it's not like I'm trying to protect anybody here at home. I just can't see how it's going to work. You know, and then we'll be back to a reactive situation instead of being proactive now and saying, okay, you know, this is what's going to happen if scenario A, B or C happens. But I don't know if they're not communicating it. If they have a plan, and why wouldn't they? Like, I think it would put people's minds at rest. I mean, I'd say this teacher is terrified going back into this, you know,
the scenario. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure there are. Stay there, Liz. Elizabeth. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You have a child returning to boarding school.
I have, yes, and I have to say I haven't heard an awful lot on any of the videos about what's going to be done with this to boarding schools, because you're not just talking about them being in school. They're there and they're going to sleep in the dorms together, and they're going to be together 24/7 for 5-6 days, and then they're sent home. So in our situation, the school is one of the largest boarding schools in the country. It has day pupils as well, and students come to that school from east, west, north, south. In some cases, they come from another country to that school. And they're going to be sent home at the weekend. So they mix together, they go home. It's like sealing, you know. And at best, you might end up with two in a dorm. At best, it could be eight, could be more. They're going to have showers together. It won't be one shower shared between two. It'll be shared between 8-10 sinks as well. Even at the very, very best level, and they're being controlled in the classroom, I can't see how they could possibly be controlled in the meantime. They have to go outside. They go for their lunch, their breakfast, their lunch, their dinner. You know, they're going to be together. As the previous caller said, you may as well just forget about it. There isn't going to be
social distancing, and you might as well just deal with that, basically.
Yeah, you have boyfriend-girlfriend scenarios. You have the smoking behind the shed. You have whatever there is in normally. We're talking about over 1,000 people put together.
Absolutely. Elizabeth, I'm sorry to cut across you, because you're actually raising a really interesting point. And you're right. I haven't heard people talking about boarding schools, and we do need to talk about that. And we'll come back to it, hopefully. But we're going to have to leave there because I have to take my last break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we are right out of time. We're over time, in fact. So apologies to Catherine. Produced today, the show was produced today by Dave Sherry. Jamie Doyle was on sound, and Maeve Mooney is the BCO. And we go over now to Catherine Thompson.